Hopefully that worked.
Yeah. Okay, so we are going to start. We've been doing topics in Maseches Ksubis. So Ksubis is known as a Shas Katan. It's known as a miniature Shas because almost virtually every topic in the Shas is touched upon in Maseches Ksubis, and we even bring it in unlikely ways. So the Gemara asks a question related to Hilchos Shabbos, related to getting married, and that launches a whole discussion about the Geder of Einu Mechavin and Psikreishah. So we're going to explain these concepts, and then we're going to say over a nice Dvar Torah from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik in order to answer a Rambam. So the Gemara says in Ksubis, in the beginning of Ksubis, Daf Heyam Beis, Iboiluhu, they had a question, Mau Livol B'tchila B'Shabbos. So we're speaking about getting married, having the Erisin, having the Suin. Is the Chassan and the Kala, are they permitted to have relations for the first time Friday night? So we know that a Besula, if the girl has her Besulin, she has her Hymen in place, so the Bia Rishoina, there's a very strong likelihood that it'll cause bleeding. So the question is, are we permitted to have relations for the first time on Friday night? So the Gemara says like this, Dam Mifkat Pocket, perhaps you're allowed to, because perhaps the Dam Besulin, the hymenal blood, is Mifkat Pocket, is considered like in a pocket. You're not really causing a wound, you're just releasing the Dam. Or maybe the Dam Besulin is attached to the body like any other blood, and therefore drawing that blood would be a malacha on Shabbos. The Gemara goes on to say, in Tim Saloimar Dam Mifkat Pocket, even if we take the side of the argument that the Dam Besulin, the hymenal blood, is Mifkat Pocket, is deposited, it's not attached to the body. So the question is, L'dam hu tzarech? Is the groom's kavana to release that dam, bishari, and therefore it's permitted, because it's not considered inflicting a wound. The blood is a very surface blood. Oidilma, l'pesach hu tzarech v'asir. Or perhaps the chassan's kavana is to create a pesach, is to create that opening through the relations, and therefore it's us. The Gemara goes on. In Tim Salimra Ladam Hutzarach, U Pesach Memela Kaasi. The Gemara says perhaps his intent is merely to release the blood, which is considered a surface blood, so it would be permitted. The fact that he's creating an opening is considered Memela. It's happening by itself. So the question is, Halacha Reb Shimon? Does the Halacha follow Reb Shimon? And here's the rule. Rav Shimon's opinion is, Dover She'ein Miskavin Mutter. Something that happens unintentionally is permitted. So this rule means that if I am attempting to do a permitted act, that would be Maisa A. I am trying to do action number one. Even if action number one could inadvertently cause another outcome, the halacha is that since I don't have kavana, it's permitted. Oy halacha k'Rab Yehuda, or perhaps the halacha follows Rab Yehuda, who disagrees with this principle. The Omar Davar She'ein Miskaven Aser, that even if you did not intend the second outcome, nevertheless it's forbidden. And the Gemara goes on to say, is it considered constructive? Is it considered destructive? So let's look at item days on the notes. The question is, What is this rule of Rav Shimon that Dover She'enu Miskaven is Mutter? The Gemara brings a Maseches Shabbos, and this is the classic case, that Rav Shimon says a person is allowed to drag a bench, provided there's an Erev, of course. The person is dragging a bench in his backyard. Goyver Adam Mita Kisei V'Safsal. A person would be allowed to drag a bench, or a chair, or some other bed, or some cot, or something. Ubilvad shlo yiskaven lasaschritz, provided that he doesn't intend to create a furrow to dig up the earth as he's dragging. So I'm dragging a bench in my backyard. I want to move it from one place to the other. As long as I do not intend, as long as my ratzon is not to create a chritz, to create a furrow, my intent is not to dig up earth, the halacha is it's permitted. And even if while I'm dragging the bench, I notice that I am inadvertently kicking up dirt, it would be permitted to continue dragging the bench, according to Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon has a rule, davar she'ein miskaven mutter, something that if your intent is to perform a permitted act, dragging a bench, there's nothing inherently wrong with schlepping the bench in your backyard, even if there's a collateral outcome that it's creating a ditch, it's permitted. However, Rabbi Yehuda says in Maseches Beya, it says, Rabbi Yehuda says, kol hakelim ein nigrarim. You're not allowed to drag any utensil on the earth if it's going to dig up earth. Chutz minu agala, except for wheeling a wagon or a carriage or something of that nature. Mipnei shehi koveshes, because since the wagon has wheels, the wagon is not really digging up the dirt. The wagon is merely compressing the earth. So there might be like an indentation in the ground after you pass by with the wagon, but that's not kicking up the dirt. That was compressing the earth. So we have a machlokes between Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda, the classic example of schlepping a bench where your intent is to do something permitted, to schlep a bench, but as a byproduct of what you're doing, something that would ordinarily be forbidden is happening. You're dragging and you're kicking up earth. Rav Shimon says it's permitted, and Rav Yehuda says that it's forbidden. Now let's explore a few examples of this. Rav Shimon's halacha, that davar she'enu miskaven, something that's happening unintentionally along with your intended act, is permitted, is not unique to Shabbos. The Gemara actually applies this rule, this heter, this permit, to kol ha'Torah kula, to other areas as well. And there are a few examples that the Gemara gives where we see this permit in other areas. So for example, the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos, on Mem Vav Amud Beis, Moichrei Ksus. Imagine if a person is selling a garment, he's selling a suit, the merchant is selling a suit. Now these suits happen to contain shatness. That's the case. It happens to contain shatness. It's klayim. So the Gemara tells us something very interesting. Moichrin kedarka. The merchant is allowed to try on the jacket and display the jacket. Provided that his intent is to do something permitted. His intent is merely to model the jacket, to display the jacket, the way it looks. His intent is not to wear the beged for the hanoas levisha, for the pleasure that the beged affords. He's not wearing the beged because he's hot. He's not wearing the beged because it's raining. He's merely wearing the beged because he wants to display the beged the way it looks. He wants to model the beged. So since his intent is only to wear the beged as a model, his intent is not to derive any benefit from that levisha, from that wearing. So Rav Shimon says that it's permitted. So you see from here that Rav Shimon not only permits malachas on Shabbos, he even permits the wearing of klayim if the Aveira is benefiting from the klayim, is only a byproduct in something that he's doing in a permitted act. It's inherently permitted to drape the klayim over your shoulder to display it. Deriving benefit from that garment is forbidden. His intent is not to derive the benefit. His intent is merely to display the garment. These are novel ideas that we might not have been aware about. Another Gemara has another example. A nazir. We know that a nazir is not allowed to get a haircut. A nazir is not allowed to pull out his hair. He took a vow. His hair has to grow for 30 days, at least. The Gemara says that a nazir is allowed to take a shower and shampoo his hair. Choyfeif umefasfeis. He's allowed to wash his hair and massage his scalp and clean his hair, because again, his intent here is merely to wash his hair. His intent is not to pull out any hair. So even if during the process of taking a shower, he inadvertently pulls out hair, it's permitted, because his intent is to do something permitted, and perhaps something forbidden would be a byproduct of what he's doing, but he is not directly intending to do that. However, the Gemara tells us he can't comb his hair because that will definitely pull out hair. We'll see more about that in a minute. Now, so we gave three examples of Eino Miskaven: dragging a bench, even though the bench is inadvertently creating a furrow. We have the example of draping the shotness jacket over your shoulder to display it, even though inadvertently or unintentionally you might be deriving benefit from that levisha. And then we have a third example of a nazir who's permitted to wash his hair, even though the act of washing his hair, a permitted act, might inadvertently pull out hair. The Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yehuda argues. Now, the Gemara is clear that Rabbi Yehuda argues fundamentally to the other extreme. Rabbi Yehuda holds that this would be an Isser D'Oraisa. So in other words, if this Nazir would realize while he's washing his hair that he's inadvertently pulling out hair, that would be an Isser D'Oraisa. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Shabbos, another example. The Pasuk says, "Ubayoyim Hashmini Yimol Bisar Orlasa," that we all know that on the eighth day, a baby receives a bris milah. So the Gemara tells us like this. Imagine, we know the halacha that if a person has tzaras, if a person has a lesion, a leprosy, he's not allowed to surgically remove the tzaras. He has to go through the process of showing it to the Kohen and becoming purified. Imagine if this baby has a tzaras on the arla, on the spot that needs to be cut off to be circumcised. It's an amazing case. The Gemara says, Bisar. The Pasuk tells us an extra word. We should cut off the flesh of the Arla, the foreskin. So the Gemara tells us that extra word, Bisar, Afo Pisheisham Beheres Imo. Even though there might be tzaras on the foreskin, the halacha is that you go ahead with the bris milah. So here's another example. Even though it's ordinarily forbidden to surgically remove the tzaras, but over here, the person is not engaged in removing tzaras. We can define his act as a permitted act. The person is, the mayel, is trying to perform a bris milah. Inadvertently, a byproduct of the bris milah is that he's removing the tzaras. So the pasuk permits it with the word besar. So the Gemara asks, lama likra? Why do we need a special pasuk to permit, particularly the bris milah? Darish einu miskavenu. It's not his intent. It's a byproduct. But darish einu miskaven mutter. According to Rav Shimon, darish einu miskaven is permitted. And we just demonstrated it's permitted in all the areas of the Torah. Why would I need a special license to perform the bris milah, even though it's going to inadvertently remove the tzaras? Davrish Einu Miskaven permits every act. So the Gemara answers, Amar Abaye Vaynitzricha Elo L'Rabbi Yehuda. The answer is because this Braisa is not Rav Shimon. You're right. According to Rav Shimon, this would be permitted anyway. This Braisa is following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds that Davrish Einu Miskaven is normally Aser. Normally it's Aser. Normally it's forbidden to drag the bench. Normally, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it would be forbidden for the Nazir to wash his hair lest he inadvertently pulls out a hair. Normally, it would be forbidden to perform the bris milah even though he unintentionally is causing the tzaras to be removed. He doesn't have intent. It would normally be forbidden. That's why we require a special pasuk to permit it according to Rabbi Yehuda. So the poskim bring this gemara, the Rishonim bring this gemara to show that Rabbi Yehuda holds that it would normally be usher d'oraisa, darish einu miskaven would normally be usher d'oraisa, according to Rabbi Yehuda, and that's why we need the special pasuk to permit the mila bitzaras. So what we've just shown is that according to Rabbi Shimon, it's permitted in all areas of the Torah, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, it would be usher d'oraisa in all areas of the Torah. There's a fascinating Tosfos in Maseches Yuma, on Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis. Tosfos says that even though Davar She'eino Miskaven is an Isser D'Oraisa according to Rabbi Yehuda. So that means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if I'm intending to do something permitted and inadvertently as a byproduct, a prohibited outcome is happening, I would have to abstain, it would be forbidden. Tosfos says, nevertheless, when it comes to Shabbos, the halacha is it would not be an Isser D'oraisa. There's a fascinating clause when it comes to Melech Shabbos. It actually yields a leniency. The Gemara tells us regarding Melech Shabbos that because all of the forbidden labors are derived from the Melechas that were involved in constructing the Mishkan, and the Pasuk tells us that the Mishkan was Meleches Machsheves, the Pasuk tells us that all of the constructive acts that went into constructing the Mishkan, cutting the panels, weaving the panels, dyeing the ink, cooking the herbs, creating the paint for the Mishkan, hammering out the gold, all of the forbidden labors that are involved that constitute the 39 Melechas of Shabbos, they're all derived from the construction of the Mishkan. The Mishkan is described as Melechas Machsheves. It was the work of a craftsman. It was Melechas Machsheves. It was an important, definitive, deliberate act of Melechas Machsheves, something that was done with Machshava, something that was done with deliberation, something that was done very carefully. So this actually yields a leniency that in order to violate Shabbos Midoraisa, the Melacha has to be performed similar to the way it was in the construction of the Mishkan. It has to be performed as a Melechas Machsheves. This raises the bar how much intent has to go in to a Melechas Shabbos in order to be considered in violation of Shabbos. This is why, for example, we know that if the Melacha is not constructive, if the Melacha is destructive, the Halacha is that the person did not violate in Issur D'oraisa of Shabbos. There's something called Mesasik. There's a fascinating halacha that imagine if the person sets out to violate Shabbos, he wants to blow out a candle. And by mistake, instead of blowing out the candle that he intended to blow out, instead he blew out a different candle. He accomplished the same thing, but it was not the particular candle that he was intending to blow out. So the Gemara tells us that because Shabbos needs to be Meleches Machsheves in order to be in violation, because he ended up blowing out the wrong candle, he's exempt. He's not considered having violated Shabbos Midoraisa because he didn't perform the labor, he didn't perform the Melacha with intent and deliberation. It was the wrong outcome. And that's also why a destructive act is not considered a violation, because it's not Meleches Machsheves. It's missing that element of intent and deliberation. So the Pasuk actually raises the bar for Meleches Shabbos, that in order to be said that the person violated Shabbos, the Melacha has to have been done with super intent. Meleches Machsheves. It has to be a constructive act, and it had to have been done deliberately. So Tosfos tells us a very interesting thing. Even though Rabbi Yehuda holds that Davar She'enu Miskaven is Aser B'kol HaTorah Kula, so again, imagine our friend the Nazir, who's taking a shower and he's washing his hair, even though he's intending to do something permitted, if inadvertently he notices that he's pulling out hair, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Nazir would have to stop, because it's an Isid D'Oraisa, Davar She'enu Miskaven, for this Nazir to violate his terms of his Naziris and to pull out hair, even inadvertently, would be an Isir D'Oraisa. Or according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the person is wearing a garment that's Klayim, even though his intent is to model the garment, because he's, as a byproduct, he's deriving benefit from that Levisha, it's Isir D'Oraisa. Nevertheless, Tosfos tells us that when it comes to Shabbos, if he's dragging the bench and he's inadvertently creating a ditch, a furrow, even though Rabbi Yehuda says that it's Aser, it's only Aser D'Rabbanan. Why? Because the bar of intent necessary to violate Shabbos is a much higher bar. Melechas machsheres. He did not perform the melacha with intent. See, even though Rabbi Yehuda usually considers not having intent the equivalent of having intent, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda holds, you don't have to intend for the Avera to happen. If you see it happening, you have to stop. But when it comes to Shabbos, Rabbi Yehuda agrees that if you didn't have intent to do it, it happened as a byproduct. Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it's not an Isser Do'iras. So let's summarize what we've just said in item Zion. Rabbi Shimon holds that Darish Einu Miskavin is mutter. It's permitted in all areas of the Torah. Shabbos, dragging the bench, Tzaras, performing the Bris Milah, even though a byproduct is removing the Tzaras, a Nazir taking a shower, inadvertently pulling out his hair, anything similar to that. The case of Klayim we had, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's Aser. Darish Einu Miskavin is Aser. Bekol HaTorah Kula, in all areas of the Torah, it's an Isser Do'iraisa. If that Nazir sees that he's pulling out hair, he's being over an Isser Do'iraisa, even though that wasn't initially his intent. However, when it comes to Shabbos, where the Avera of Shabbos violation, is a much higher bar in order to be considered non-compliant, in order to be considered that you're violating Shabbos, Maleches Machsheves, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that it's not a biblical violation. It's only rabbinic, it's only derabbanan, because it's missing the condition of Maleches Machsheves. Now, the Gemara tells us in Ksubis, in Maseches Ksubis, Rav Paskins like Rabbi Yehuda, that Dabra She'enu Miskaven is Aser, while Shmuel Paskins like Rabbi Shimon, that Dabra She'enu Miskaven is Mutter. Okay, now, the Gemara tells us now another condition. The Gemara tells us in Ksubis on the Vav Amar Aleph that Abaye and Rava both say, Moida Rab Shimon bipsik reisha v'lo yomus. So this is on the second page, item tes. Abaye and Rava both say that Rab Shimon agrees that a psik reisha v'lo yomus. This is an expression in the Gemara, it's an interesting expression. Psik reisha. If you cut off the chicken's head, is the chicken going to live? Is the chicken not going to die? In other words, imagine if a person says, I hold like Rab Shimon, that if I'm engaged in something permitted, even if something forbidden is a byproduct, it's permitted. So does that give us a license to cut the chicken's head off and say that I want to play with the chicken's head? The Gemara says that in those days they used the chicken's head as a toy for children. So you're trying to cut the chicken's head off, and you might as well shecht while you're doing that. Your intent is simply to get the chicken's head. The fact that the chicken died, the fact that the chicken was shechted, is a byproduct. Could anybody claim that? Could anybody permit a shechita on Shabbos because he doesn't have kavana? That would be ridiculous. The Gemara tells us, Abaye and Rava say, that Rav Shimon, who says you have to have intent, would agree. That psik reisha v'lo yamos, if you cut off the chicken's head, is it not going to die? What does this mean? This means that if the byproduct is inevitable, if you know for sure that you will yield that byproduct, then the halacha is that it's forbidden. So Tosfos goes back and explains. This is an added piece of information that we weren't aware of before. Tosfos goes back and explains that all of the cases that Rav Shimon permits is only if it's not inevitable. Sometimes you drag that bench in the backyard and it does create a furrow. Sometimes you drag the bench and it doesn't. It depends on the conditions. It depends perhaps if it's very dry outside, if it's moist outside. Who knows what the conditions depend on. But when you're dragging that bench, it could just as easily not make a furrow as if it could make a furrow. And therefore, that's when Rav Shimon permits it. Or Rav Shimon permits the Nazir to take a shower because sometimes he takes a shower and he does not inadvertently pull out hair. Sometimes he does pull out hair. It's not a psik reisha. It's not inevitable. It's not as if you're cutting off the head of the chicken and expecting the chicken to live. Sometimes he loses hair in the shower. Sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes when he drags the bench creates a ditch. Sometimes it doesn't. Those are the cases where we can separate the acts and we can say that I'm intending to do something permitted and the prohibited act is a byproduct, an unintentional byproduct. But if you know for sure that Maisa A, that the first act, will definitely yield the second act, then the two acts are inevitable, are linked, and since they're linked, you can't say that it's being done unintentionally. When the man was wearing the garment in order to model the garment, even though it was shatnis, Tosfos explains that we're speaking about a case where it's not inevitable that he's going to be receiving benefit. Maybe it's not so cold outside. Maybe he wouldn't get wet from the rain anyway. So therefore, that's the case where he can try wearing the garment because it's not muchrach, it's not certain that he's going to derive benefit. So it comes out that davar she'enu miskaven, this is in item yud, a davar she'enu miskaven is mutter according to Rav Shimon in all areas of the Torah, and according to Rav Yehuda, it's aser d'oraisa, but on Shabbos, Rav Yehuda agrees that it's only aser d'rabanan because it's missing malechas mashas. If it's a psik reshe, if it's inevitable, that's as if you had kavana, and then it would be aser d'oraisa, both according to Rav Shimon, both according to Rav Yehuda, even on Shabbos, and certainly in Kol HaTorah Kula. Those are the facts. These are the yesoidos. These are the concepts that the Gemara introduces regarding Eino Mechavin. Eino Mechavin is as if you didn't have intent, but whenever it's a psik ratio, whenever it's inevitable, then everybody agrees that it's as if you had intent. It's as if it's kavan. When it comes to Shabbos, the standard is higher, and even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it's necessary to have intent in order to be in full violation. And a psik ratio, again, if it's inevitable, it'll be considered as if there's intent. Now, there's a fascinating Shitas Ha'aruch, the opinion of the Aruch. It's a famous opinion. Tosfos brings this opinion in a few places. Tosfos brings it in Yuma. Tosfos brings it in Ksubis. It comes up in Masechta Shabbos, Masechta Zvachim. It's a fascinating Shita of the Aruch. The Aruch Rav Nassan, Baal Ha'aruch, was a Rishon, and he wrote something that was probably the first encyclopedia. It's written in alphabetical order, Aleph Beis order, and the Aruch explains concepts. So the Aruch writes in the section referring to Eino Mechavin, it's brought in Tosfos and Ksubis, and in many places, that a psik ratio, even though it's inevitable, if it's loy nichale means you have no interest, you're indifferent about creating that outcome, it's still considered eino mechavin. So we took the Gemara at face value that if the byproduct is inevitable, it's as if you have intent. The Aruch adds another condition. It's only considered that you had intent if you are happy with that byproduct. He didn't do it for that reason, chas v'shalom. He's not outright doing an avera. He's engaged in a permitted act, but he's happy with the byproduct, with the unintentional result that's being yielded. Imagine if the person is dragging a bench, and the conditions are such that you know that dragging the bench will yield that chritz. If you're happy with the resulting chritz, that's when it's considered kavan. But if you're indifferent, why would I want to have a ditch in my backyard? Right? I have no interest in creating a ditch in my backyard. If it's loy nichale, if you're indifferent to that outcome, so the Aruch, Rav Nassim Bala Aruch, has a tremendous leniency that it's still considered eino miskaven. It's still considered unintentional. See, even though we've been saying that if it's inevitable, it's as if you had kavana, but Rav Nassim Bala Aruch is machadish. He teaches us that if you don't benefit from that outcome, so it would be considered, it would still be considered eino miskaven. Only if you're nichale, only if you are happy with that byproduct, only then is it considered miskaven. But if you're not, if you're indifferent to the outcome, it's still considered not having kavana, and you would still have the heter of Rav Shimon of eino miskaven. Now, the Aruch has a few proofs to this, and this is debated in the Rishonim, but these are the proofs of the Aruch. Says the Aruch, the Ikar Raya, this is item Yud Beis, the biggest proof that the Aruch has to this idea is a Gemara in Zvachim. The Gemara in Zvachim says that if a person pledges to bring wine as an offering on the Mizbeach, so the Gemara tells us the proper way to offer the wine to Hashem on the Mizbeach is to pour the wine on top of the Mizbeach. That's how you offer the wine as a carbon to the Mizbeach. This is one opinion in the Gemara in Zvachim. Now, the Gemara asks Akasha that how are you allowed to pour the wine directly on the top of the Mizbeach? Aren't you going to inadvertently extinguish the flame that's on the Mizbeach? And the Pasuk says, Eish tamid tukar al Mizbeach loy sichbe. The Pasuk says that you're not allowed to extinguish the flame on the Mizbeach. The Gemara actually tells us that there was a special moikah, there was a special bonfire on the side of the Mizbeach, specifically for this purpose, that if the Kohanim ever saw the flame going out, they would quickly rekindle the flame. Because there's a mitzvah to never let the flame go out on the top of the Mizbeach. So how could the Gemara suggest that the proper way to offer the carbon of the Yayin, the Nesachim, is to pour it directly on the Mizbeach, right? Normally we're familiar hearing that they would pour it in Safsalim, they would pour the wine in a container that was on the side of the Mizbeach, but the Gemara tells us there that there's an opinion that you would pour a nedava, you would pour a voluntary wine offering directly on the Mizbeach. How could the Gemara suggest that if you're going to be extinguishing the flame? So says the Aruch that the Gemara is going according to Rav Shimon. The Gemara says that mizalfin yayin al gavio ishim, you're allowed to pour the wine libation onto the flames of the Mizbeach, even though it's a psik ratio, even though it's inevitable that you're going to extinguish the flame, but because you're indifferent, you certainly do not want to extinguish the flame. Your intent here is to offer the wine as a sacrifice. Your intent here is not to extinguish the flame, and therefore, it's a psik ratio. It's true, it's a psik ratio. It's inevitable, but it's lo nichale. That's not your, you're not, you're indifferent. You're not in any way happy or benefiting from that outcome. That's not at all your intent. Your intent is simply to offer the wine to Hashem, and therefore it's mutter. So this is a big proof that the Aruch has that a dover, that a psik ratio, that your loy nichalei, a psik ratio where you have no benefit from that byproduct outcome, is still considered unintentional. Another interesting proof that he brings, the halacha is on Sukkis, that if your hadasim have black berries attached to the hadasim, if there are too many black berries, the hadasim are invalid because the discoloration of the black berries invalidates the hadasim. So the question is, am I allowed to pluck off these black berries on the first day of Yom Tov to render my hadasim kosher? If I remove the flaw, the black berries, my hadasim will be kosher. So the Gemara tells us that you're not allowed to do that because it's considered fixing something on Shabbos or fixing something on Yom Tov. So you're not allowed to do that. Says the Gemara, tells us that Rabbi Lazar, the son of Rav Shimon, Rav Shimon is the one who holds that davar she'eino miskaven, if it's unintentional, it's permitted. Says the Gemara that Rabbi Eliezer, who was the son of Rav Shimon, he paskins that you're allowed to remove the black berries from the hadasim. And the Gemara asks the obvious question, but aren't you fixing something? Aren't you creating a kosher hadas? So the Gemara says that his intent was not to fix the hadasim. His intent was to eat the berries. His intent was simply to eat the berries. They're like grapes. They're like black grapes on the hadasim. His intent was to eat the berries. And it was only a byproduct that he was rendering the hadas to be a kosher hadasim. The Gemara asks the obvious question, but didn't we say that Rav Shimon agrees that if it's a psik ratio, if the outcome is inevitable, it's considered that you have intent? Answers the Gemara, the case is that he already has a kosher set of hadasim. So when he's pulling off the berries to eat, he's not intending to kosher the hadasim, to render the hadasim kosher. His intent is primarily to eat the berries, and he's indifferent with the outcome of the kosher hadasim because he already has a kosher set of hadasim. He already purchased a kosher lulav and esrog set in the shul, and he has no interest, he has no benefit in the fact that he's indirectly kashering another set of hadasim. His intent is to eat the berries. So here's an example where it's a psik resha. It seems that it's inevitable that he will kasher the hadasim, but because he's indifferent to that outcome, he has no intent and he has no benefit from that outcome, it's still considered to be an unintentional act and it's permitted. So these are the two big proofs that the Orach has that an inevitable outcome that you're indifferent to is still considered unintentional. That's the Orach. So just in summary, according to Rav Shimon, Dover She'eno Miskaven is permitted. If I am engaged in a permitted act and an unintentional byproduct occurs, I'm exempt. I'm permitted to continue doing what I'm doing. The Gemara tells us that if it's inevitable, then it's forbidden. Says the Aruch, an added condition, a leniency, that if the inevitable outcome is something that doesn't benefit you in any way, you're indifferent to that, it's still considered eino miskaven, it's still considered unintentional. So these are the concepts that the Gemara lays down for us and that the Rishonim lay down for us. Now, what the Achronim do, what Reb Chaim does with these concepts is incredible. The Gemara, he wants to answer a kasha on the Rambam, a tremendous question on the Rambam. The Gemara tells us like this, in item Yud Dalet, let's just scroll down a little bit on the, scroll up, I should say, a little bit on the notes. In item Yud Dalid, the Gemara tells us on Daf Kuf Zayin, Hamapis Morsa B'Shabbos. The Gemara tells us that a person has a pimple on Shabbos, some sort of infection on Shabbos, and it's causing him pain. He wants to squeeze the infection to release the pus. Hamapis Morsa. So the Gemara tells us, Im Lasois Peh, If the person is intending to create, to fashion an opening on the infection in order that the pus should drain and that air should go back in and that it should heal, that would be an Issa D'Oraisa. Because he's fashioning a Pesach, that would be considered an Issa D'Oraisa. However, if his intent is merely to temporarily relieve the pain by releasing some of the pressure by squeezing out the lecha, the pus, his intent is not that the opening should remain there for any duration of time. The person doesn't mind if the nekev, if the hole on the infection would seal up immediately. That's not his intent. His intent is merely to release the impression of to release the pressure of the infection by squeezing out some of the pus. The halacha is that it's potter. And the Gemara tells us, who is this mantana? Who is the tana that permits you to squeeze out the pus, even though a byproduct is the Pesach? Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, it's Rav Shimon, the Omar Malacha She'ein Tzricha Legufa Potter Ale. Now this is another concept. A Malacha She'ein Tzricha Legufa means that this is different than Eino Miskaven. Eino Miskaven means that you don't have intent to do the Malacha. You're dragging the bench and the hole or the furrow is being created inadvertently. There's another halacha regarding Shabbos, that a malacha she'in tzricha legufa, imagine if he's deliberately digging a hole. Why is it forbidden to dig a hole on Shabbos? Because you're building something, you're creating a storage space, or because you're plowing, you're perfecting the land, you are preparing the land in order to plant. So you're working with the land. Imagine if the person's intent is not to improve the land. His intent is to procure the dirt. He's performing a malacha, but it's not tzricha legufa. It's not for its intended purpose. So Rav Shimon holds that it's potter. There's another example of that. Imagine if there's a snake that's been scaring people. We're not discussing a case of pikuach nefesh. We're discussing a snake is scaring people. So the halacha is, you're allowed to cover the snake with a container and prevent the snake from going around and threatening the people. If you're misasik, if your intent is that it shouldn't bite anybody, you're exempt, because your intent is not to capture the snake. Your intent is simply to get rid of the snake. But if you're catching the snake for refuah, you want to catch the snake because the venom of the snake could be fashioned into some kind of vaccine or something of that nature. So you're actually trapping the snake in order to procure the snake. That would be a melacha de araisa of tzad, of hunting, of capturing on Shabbos. When they were constructing the Mishkan, it was a melacha, one of the laborers involved catching the animals they needed to obtain the hides or to obtain the various inks. So if you do it for refuah, if you're catching this snake in order for refuah, to use the snake for medicinal purposes, the Gemara tells us that they used to use snakes for medicinal purposes, then you'll be chayv. Who is the author of this braisa? Again, the Gemara says it's Rav Shimon, because Rav Shimon holds that a malacha she'ein tzricha legufa is exempt. So the Gemara tells us a few examples, removing the pus from an infection, from a pimple, where your intent is simply to relieve the pressure, it's not to fashion an opening. Another example, catching the snake, not to catch the snake for its own sake, but merely to remove the snake from scaring the people, from harassing the people. The Gemara says the reason why you're exempt is because it's a malacha she'ein tzricha legufa. The malacha is not being done for the intended purpose. The Magid Mishnah asks on the Rambam. The Rambam says that the Rambam paskins like this Gemara that all of these examples are permitted and are exempt and are even permitted on Shabbos. But here's the question. The Rambam paskins that a malacha she'ein tzricha legufa is chayiv. The Gemara itself says that the only reason why it's permitted is because malacha she'ein tzricha legufa is pater. And in these cases, they made an exception that it's permitted. But the Rambam paskins that malacha she'ein tzricha legufa is chayiv, is an issa d'oraisa. So how could the Rambam allow you to perform these forbidden acts on Shabbos? So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, using the various concepts that we touched on tonight, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik gives an amazing answer. The Gemara tells us that the Rambam, Rav Chaim tells us, I should say, that the Rambam paskins like Rav Nosson Bal HaOrach. He holds like the opinion of the Orach, that a psik resha, that you are indifferent to the outcome, is still considered Eino Miskav. Says Rav Chaim, let's just back up, let's just review an important point that we made earlier. Rav Shimon holds that Eino Miskaven is mutter b'kol ha'terah kula. If you don't have intent, it's mutter b'kol ha'terah kula. Rav Yehuda normally holds that Eino Mechaven is asur midoiraisa. But when it comes to Shabbos, when you need meleches machsheves, you need intent, even Rav Yehuda agrees that the melacha is exempt, is sometimes permitted. It's not a malacha d'oraisa. We mentioned that a psik resha is considered like you had kavan. We mentioned that according to the Aruch, if you're indifferent to the outcome, it's still considered enu mechaven. So look what Rav Chaim does. Rav Chaim has a very creative combination here of concepts. Rav Chaim says that a psik resha d'loy nichalei, a psik resha that you're indifferent to the outcome, which is still considered eino mechavin, it's still considered unintentional, that's only unintentional in the eino mechavin of the rest of the Torah, in other areas of the Torah. But if you hold like Rav Yehuda, that eino mechavin is normally in Isser D'oraisa, and it's just when it comes to Shabbos, where you need meleches machsheves, that's why it's permitted, then a psik resha would still satisfy the requirement of meleches machsheves, even though you're indifferent to the outcome, but you're aware of the outcome. The outcome is inevitable. Then that would be a fulfillment of meleches machsheves. So when does the Aruch say that a psik resha is still considered unintentional? That's if you subscribe to Rav Shimon that every malacha has to be done willingly. Then we say that if you're indifferent to the outcome, you still have the exemption of Eino Mechav. But when it comes to the world of Rabbi Yehuda, that he doesn't require intent in other areas of Torah. It was only when it came to Shabbos, where the bar was higher, because you need Meleches Machsheves, the Aruch would never have said that when it's when it's obsekresha, just because you're indifferent to the outcome, that it's still considered enu mechad. That already would satisfy the requirement of Meleches Mashias. So says Reb Chaim the following. The Rambam holds that Melacha She'ein Tzricha L'gufa is Chayef. But the Rambam holds that these examples of catching the snake, where you have no interest in procuring the snake for medicinal purposes, your intent is simply to separate the snake from the rest of the people, that would be considered Eino Mechavin. Even though it's inevitable that you will also have catched the snake, that's a byproduct, but your primary intent was simply to separate the snake from the rest of the people. Or, for example, a person is puncturing the pimple, the infection, in order to relieve the pressure of the pus. The fact that there is that a Pesach, that an opening is being fashioned, that's Eino Mechavin, and that's why it's mutter. So the question was, but the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara says that it's considered like you had intent for the Malacha, and it's only a Malacha She'ein Tzricha L'gufa. The answer is that the Gemara, who is talking in the Gemara? Rav was talking in the Gemara. Rav holds like Rav Yehuda that normally Eino Mechavin is an Isser D'Oraisa. So when it's a Psik Reisha, that satisfies the additional Meleches Machshavos requirement. However, the Rambam holds like Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon holds that Eino Mechavin is Mutter in all areas of Torah. So therefore, we can still consider this to be an unintentional act by virtue of Rav Shimon. So the Rambam has a way to paskin like this Gemara, even though he disagrees with the reason that the Gemara provided. Because the Gemara was going according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds that normally Eino Mechavin is Chayiv. It's only on Shabbos where there's an extra requirement of Meleches Machshavos. Even a Psik Reisha, the Lainichale, satisfies that requirement. The Rambam can still manage to paskin like this Gemara for a different reason. Because the Rambam paskins like Rav Shimon. If you paskin like Rav Shimon, you have to want the outcome. And since you don't have any interest, you're indifferent to the outcome, it'll be mutter, not because it's a Malacha She'ein Tzricha L'gufa, it'll be mutter by virtue of being Eino Mechavin. So this is an amazing demonstration of how the Gemara's concepts could be utilized and combinations can be formed in order to create amazing results. Yasha Koyach, everybody.